And of course, this is the hour we take your phone calls. Sandra Champlain with us. We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. And welcome back. Sandra Champlain with us here. Sandra, you have talked about three stages of truth. Tell me how that ties into this.
Well, interesting. The German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer said, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident. Why that's important is I give you some names of people. Thomas Edison was laughed at for many of his creations, including the light bulb. It will never catch on, it was said. The Wright brothers, Wilbur and Orville, their flying machine, they were laughed at. Our country back in the day did not support them, and even though they made their flight back in 1903, they couldn't publicly demonstrate until being in Le Mans, France, several years later, mm-hmm. because nobody believed them. And they laughed at them, even Henry Ford for the automobile. There's never going to be a horseless carriage. We need horses. So back in those days, they were ridiculed, laughed at, awful. And then here we are however many years later, and it's self-evident. It's like it's always been. Every airplane ride I take, upon takeoff, I thank Orville and Wilbur because of what's happened. And so I know the time will come that people will be looking back on this day going, gosh, I can't believe they didn't believe in the afterlife.
You know, lately I'd rather be on a plane that Orville and Wilbur made compared to what is happening these days. Huh?
I know.
Sad story. Well, that's fascinating. But do you think that the afterlife studies will be widely accepted in the not-too-distant future instead of so skeptical?
I do. There's people like the Afterlife Research and Education Institute that are hard at work. I'm pairing up with them. And then our friends Suzanne Wilson and Kathleen Malone doing the Soul Summit coming up in September.
I'll be there.
Yes. There's so many things happening. And there's a great book called The Tipping Point. There will come a time where there'll be a tip, and it'll be more open. And you can already see it happening with television shows about mediumship and even EVPs and ghost hunters. And while I think some of them are based on, Hollywood, not knocking Hollywood, but may not be truth in everything, it gets people interested. When the movie White Noise came out,
sure.
The intention was not to be scary, because at that time, it was just loving messages that were coming through. But because of that horror movie, a lot of people got interested in EVPs.
I hated Chucky dolls ever since Hollywood did that.
Me too. But anyways, yeah, I do think in our lifetime, things will start happening fast. And like I said, look what happened with the cell phone. It'll happen. And there's also going to be communication, teaching people how to quiet our minds so that we can all tap into this space, because I believe our loved ones, the term hereafter is really accurate, because energy can be on top of energy, just like around you and me, there could be radio waves and television signals and GPS signals and all those things right here and now. So I do believe that the hereafter is right here, just vibrating on a different frequency, and there'll be education for all how to quiet our mind, be in the present moment, with a loving intention. Love is really a very driving force, and that we are able to connect with our own loved ones that way.
What do you think our next breakthrough will be in the after-death studies?
Our next breakthrough?
Something dramatic that could just open up the gates, the floodgates on this.
I think it's going to be between electronic voice phenomena and the filming and capturing photos, that when people start getting those on their own, then the science, who has ridiculed it, will all of a sudden feel like they need to catch on to participate in it. And once we get mainstream science involved, not just a lot of people working hard at it around the world, then we could really break through. You know, if we could pick up our cell phone and text our loved one.
And they can text you back.
Dad shows the picture of himself. It's like, oh, hey, Pop. And I also think we're going to live a whole different kind of life, believing in the afterlife. We won't spend years grieving. When times get tough, you know, there's some days that I have some bad days, as positive as I may sound, and I just say, you know what, this is education for my soul. Maybe I asked for it just this way. What can I learn?
You have a bad day, that means you're human. Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
You ready for the calls?
Ready.
Let's go to Oregon. Alicia's there. Welcome to the program. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, George. Hey, my question is absolute truth. She was just talking about the three steps, three stages.
Yes.
I find that either when I'm speaking or sometimes when people speak to me, that when I hear, I get goosebumps up and down both arms and sometimes on my legs, that I know that that's absolute truth. It's just, I guess, my body's way of confirming it.
I get the exact same thing when I know or I don't know. And when sometimes I get the goosebumps. So how did you get the goosebumps in this last hour?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good answer.
I like my BS detector, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing. It really is, because we humans can't take everything at face value. And, you know, there's no...
We shouldn't.
There's no real reward when we don't do the work. You know, I know some people that were born into a lot of money, and they're different than the person that worked very, very, very hard all their life to create a good income.
Well, listen to that scandal that broke today about those colleges. Did you hear about that?
No.
They've found and they've arrested and charged 50 people already for some kind of college scam where people of wealth have been paying hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to get their kids in college and through bribes.
Wow.
I mean, if the kid's not good enough to get in on their own merits, don't worry about it. Send them to, a different kind of school.
And let them work for it.
Yeah. Send them to a community college for a couple of years and build up.
Right.
Unbelievable. Let's go next to Bart in Boston. Welcome to the program. Hey, Bart, go ahead.
That is quite an interesting program.
Thank you, Bart.
I was at my brother-in-law's funeral, and then when we came back to the house, there was probably about 50 people in the house, you know, and a little collation afterwards. And you can imagine the amount of murmur that's in there. It's a big house, but the noise level is up. And my brother had passed about 8 years earlier, and another brother-in-law had passed probably about 5 years earlier. And suddenly the noise went down, and I'm talking to a friend of mine, and the curtain parted, and I see my brother coming in from the left, and he was a Korean War veteran, and he had a tough life. I never really saw his face, but he had a very distinctive profile as a young man. And there he is with a body. He had been cremated, but he has a body probably when he was about 20.
Huh.
That's my brother-in-law coming at me. He's actually at him, but he's walking at an angle. Had been a baseball coach and football player all his life. And then, of course, he was limping then. He had a couple of hip replacements and everything. But he's looks like he's about 20 years younger and about 30 pounds lighter. And neither one of them acknowledged me, but my brother-in-law walks up to my brother and extends his hand and says, "Hi, Herb, come with me."
And you're witnessing all this.
I'm witnessing this, but it's like in an eye blink.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Bart, because I've heard stories, a lot of stories of that, and most often it happens when you're in that zone, kind of like when you're driving down the road and you say, "Did I miss my exit?" You know, you're in that in-between zone, and I've heard that story a lot, that it's like you can tap into the hereafter, and I do think there's a way that we can do that we can all do that, but it's when you least expect it, because I do believe they're here after. I don't think... There's a great book called "Do Dead People Watch Me in the Shower?" by a medium.
Oh, and boy.
No, they're busy. You know, they're doing things. But they're just a thought away when we need them. And so I think you did. You just tapped into that other plane of existence.
Let's go to Alberta, Canada. Fred's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, thank you very much. Just have a couple quick questions I wanted to ask.
Okay.
My first question is, I'm 46 years old. In my life, I have experienced deja vu quite a few times, probably like three times very major for when it's hit me to be a major event, probably twice where it's just been like an everyday thing, like maybe eating a meal at a table or something. And I was just wondering, is there anything to the afterlife, to the current life, like concerning deja vu?
Deja vu, I'm not an expert at, but what I do believe is that being a soul having a human experience, we have the same tools and makeup of the souls living in the afterlife. So we are much more powerful beyond what we know. So I think it's something to do with our, this is my guess anyway, something to do with our psychic nature, because we can pick up the past, we can pick up the future or possible futures and the present. And I know you just had the guest on with remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe we can tap into that. So I've had that feeling of deja vu, and it's pretty wild, but I do think that's, it could be a nature of our psychic self.
The medical community will say that what this is temporal lobe epilepsy. Check into that.
Well,
yeah.
You know, also the medical with the near-death experiences, this is something interesting, going on a little tangent. They would say it's just by nature of a brain shutting down, it would see a bright light and things like that. Ken Ring is someone who studied near-death experiences of blind people. They never had vision, and in the near-death experience, they actually had vision for the first time and could tell what was happening in the operating room and things like that. So I do think there's so much, we're so much more powerful than we know.
Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello, Bear.
Hello there, old buddy, old pal, old friend of mine.
I'm convinced you have a script that's written out in front of you, isn't it?
Can I be a new friend? Hi, Barry.
Hey, Sandra, how are you, girlfriend? And I want you to know that I have eaten lunch at your food tent at the Daytona International Speedway about 7 or 8 years ago. I was down there for the 8 days of February Speed Weeks. I watched the 24 Hours of Daytona one weekend and the Daytona 500 the following weekend.
Would you have been there, Sandra?
I sure would. I've been there the last 33 years I've been at the Daytona Speedway.
Yeah, Barry, I always thought you were a roadkill kind of guy.
George, you're right about that part, buddy. I've got a raccoon out on my front porch eating dinner right now at 4 a.m. in the morning. And anyway, Sandra, we don't die. My wonderful wife, Martha, and I were just sitting on our front porch overlooking Lake Wylie, South Carolina, at the ducks and the geese and the bass and the brim. And I'm telling you, we were talking about the life hereafter. And sure enough, I am a total believer that we're in a different dimension right now. And when we lived before and when we live after this life, we'll be in a different dimension. George knows exactly what I'm talking about. And fascinating subject. Thank you so much for being on the air.
Oh, you're so welcome. And nice hearing from you, because I'm sure we met face-to-face in that food tent.
We've got Donna in Cleveland next on Coast to Coast. Donna, you are up with us.
Hi. I was actually two things.
Sure.
That three-day course you took, that's kind of amazing, 3 days to be able to, and especially your first try, be able to read somebody.
Well, that was only my first try. When I tried to do it after that, I couldn't do it. I did it sometimes. The problem is when fear is involved,
you hold back.
It shuts off the psychic sense.
Yep.
When I can just fuel it with love. But when she told me I was just pretending and making up someone, because we use our imagination, same faculty, then it was easy because I didn't think I was doing it. So I have not gone on to be a medium because it's just, well, I will practice, but there's a lot of fear inside, what if I get it wrong, you know, and somebody's right. in front of me.
That, right, that's amazing. Yeah. Now, also, quieting your mind, that's, like, the hardest part.
It's awful.
And I was wondering if you had any, like, any suggestions on how to, you know, go about, because mm-hmm. quieting your mind, I find, is the hardest thing to do.
It is, and it's like a muscle you're building, and my mind's very busy. What I do is I concentrate on my breath. I say a little prayer. So whoever you believe in, have a loving intent, help me quiet my mind, for I'd like to get a sign from my dad. One thing I did actually ask my dad, I said, can you give me some kind of a sign in images that you're around? And so what I did is I just paid attention to breathing in, breathing out. And every time a thought would come, I'm like, oh, let me just pay attention to my breath going in and going out. Well, all of a sudden, Donna, I start seeing like a slideshow in my mind of things that my dad and I did together. And now certainly that could have come from my mind, but there were so many things I had forgotten about, and they came so fast. And so I thought, I was very comforted. But it is something that when I do it when I go to bed at night, I just say, okay, let me just practice now, breathing in, breathing out. And you don't have to be perfect because you're human, but it's in those, it's like you're strengthening a muscle. It's like you're plugging in a cell phone, and every time you do that, you're charging yourself up, like your psychic self, your soul self.
Let's go to Jody now in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the program. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning. Pleasure to speak to both of you all.
Thank you.
Listen, I have a question for Sandra. I had a very amazing thing happen to me on a road trip from Houston going up to Minnesota, where my family lives. And I was in probably 11 o'clock at night, just me and my dog in the pickup, and I stopped at a truck stop because the little light on my dashboard started blinking, saying I needed air in my tires. I'm like, that's weird. I just did it at the last gas station. So I pull in there, just me, and I'm way over by the gas pumps, and I let my dog out with me, not on a leash. A car pulls in, older couple, they're looking at me. I'm like, oh, I just know they're going to come over and say something because my dog's off the leash. They get out of the car. He leans against the car, and she starts walking towards me. They're out, up by the store. And I said, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry. There was nobody here. So I thought, she said, no. You're Jody, right? I said,
Yeah.
And she goes, someone has sent me to give you a message. I don't want you to think I'm some crazy old lady. I'm not a psychic or anything like that. I've just been given messages a few times throughout my life to get to somebody. And this person that you have was demanding that we stop at this gas station. We never stop here. We always go to the Exxon. And I'm just kind of standing there like frozen. I'm like, okay. She goes, but I was told that I needed to give, you're not going to believe me. So I have to give just some verifying information or something like that, she said. I'm not saying anything. My mouth is like wide open. And this lady, she's probably about 80 years old. She starts telling me about my life. I mean, she told me stuff I never heard. Like she said, you've always been drawn and attracted to water. You've moved many times so you could be by the ocean. And I'm like,
somebody was feeding her the info. Who was it?
Well, she didn't tell me that. She goes, it is a female. And I can't tell you more than that, but she, you know, wanted me to give you this information so you would know that I'm not some crazy lady.
Who do you think it was?
Well, I have a deceased grandmother. I was not ever really close to her.
Would,
I don't know yet.
Would she have known all those? Would she have known all those things about you?
Yes, she would. But she, this is the weird thing. She said you've been going through some stuff with your. You've been moved because you have trying to get away from a negative spirit.
Well, you got to watch out for those negative spirits. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Sandra Champlain as we talk about her work in the spirit world, We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death. When you wrote the book, Sandra, tell us how you began to put it together.
Interesting. I had it so much in my heart that I wanted to write, and I met a publisher, and he couldn't believe I wanted to write what I wanted to write. He says, you really think you have the answers? I said, yeah. So he gave me the best advice. He said, write like you're talking to me. And he had lost his dad. And so I said, okay. And he said, give me a book proposal. So I figured out how to do that. He said, write your two best chapters, you feel. So one would be my evidence of the afterlife at that point. And there's so much more now after the 300 interviews. But the other one was called How to Survive Grief. And it was literally like I wrote just talking to him. So readers feel like I'm talking just to you when they read it. But those two chapters he had brought to a friend of his who was in the hospice, and it transformed how he felt about his life and his not too distant death. And the response I got back is, how soon can you have the whole book written? So I just imagined that person who had lost a loved one, who wanted some answers and wanted some comfort. And so the book really is about my journey, about why I believe in the afterlife. But I did sneak in that one chapter on grief. And the rest is, if we don't die, who are we? How to have a powerful life. So that when we take that last breath and close our eyes for the last time, we can look back and say, wow, I really got my money's worth out of life and went for it.
Interesting take. Let's take final calls. Joe in the Bronx, take it away. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, George. How are you?
Great, Joe. Thank
you. Good. Yeah, Sandra, our loved ones, when we have these visitations from the other side, the afterlife, our loved ones don't always show up in the form we expect. It may be a gust of wind that blows through a closed door, or a scent that we can somehow associate with that person. Now, why do they choose these alternate forms of communication to come through to us?
Well, I think, thank you for bringing that up, because those are different signs. And I think when we transition to the other side, I do think there's a place that we learn how to do this. And some people call it the halls of learning. I don't think just when we die, we have all the answers and we've got it all together. I think we have to learn things. And so it's an art of manipulating energy, whether the people turn on and off the TV or the lights or, like you say, the gust of wind or finding a feather. But I think they may be playing around with the different ways to get through. And I can't imagine somebody trying to get through to me is going to have a very hard time because my mind's busy all of the time. But my grandmother had a red boa that she would wear to be silly. And so even when my mind is busy, when I see a small red feather that can only come from a red boa, I think of my grandmother. So there might be different ways that they're trying to get through to say, I'm right here. I love you. I haven't gone.
We've got first-time caller John in South Carolina now. Welcome to the program. Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Good afternoon or good night. How y'all doing today?
Great, John. Thanks.
I know I've been looking for an answer to a question for almost 30 years, and I just happened to hear y'all on the radio, and I think I might actually finally get it.
Okay, let's give it a try.
My father committed suicide in 1989. We were riding around looking for him. We couldn't find him, and at about 7 o'clock that evening on August 5th, I went blind. I couldn't see anything for a good minute or two. That next day, the coroner came and told us, and then they did what they do, and said he died around 7 o'clock. And then for the next 4 or 5 days, I seen my father get up and get ready for work and leave the house every day, and he would look down the hall at my bedroom, and he wouldn't look at me. He would look past me like he was just looking into the room, and then he would leave. And it got to the point we moved in less than a week out the house, and my mother made me go see a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist basically said that it was just a burnt memory. It was something that I expected to see, so that's why I saw it every morning. But I never felt that was a legitimate explanation.
You think otherwise, Sandra, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I believe you saw him. You saw his etheric body, as it's called. That you were in whatever frame of mind you were in, that he was able to get through. And did you find it comforting, John?
Yes and no, I guess. I mean, a teenager at 14.
Oh, you're young.
I had big issues myself.
Right.
But yes, it was nice to see him. It was almost like he was, regardless, he was still there trying to check on us and make sure we were okay.
They do care, Sandra, don't they?
They care. And I just want to touch on suicide. I went through a terrible depression after my father died. And although I wasn't ready to take my own life, I could totally understand why somebody feeling that bad would think it would be the only way to go. So knowing that our brain chemistry changes when we grieve and when we're depressed, I would never judge somebody unless I, you know, 'cause I'm not in their shoes. I do know from these countless interviews that I've done and every bit of research that anyone that takes their own life is greeted with open arms by loved ones on the other side. And
you're not banned to hell, right?
They're not banned. No, they're comforted. The one thing, though, that has me not want to take my own life is you actually get to see the impact that your death would have on the people around you. So you actually get to see their pain and suffering, and you realize that you truly didn't die. So that would just be a little bit of a hardship for me. But again, you're greeted with loving beings, and your loved ones are there. And so we each grow ourselves and judge ourselves. No one's saying you're right or wrong. But if we don't die, do our best to make the most of life and get help if you are somebody depressed.
Any follow-up there, question, John?
Oh, well, I mean, I appreciate that's what I felt. And something that I do want to ask, I just thought about it, but two other people in that same house have killed themselves the same identical way.
There could be some kind of demon in that house, Sandra.
Yeah, I'm not a demonologist. I've never come across that, but I do know for every bit of light, there's darkness. So I don't know the answer to that. But I do believe heavily in the power of prayer, the power of love, the power of gratitude. And so whether you think you're making this up or not, go around the house, bless it, envision any negative energy turning into this positive, loving energy.
Let's go next to Anonymous in Arizona. Welcome to the program. Hello there, Anonymous.
Hi, George. Remember me? You helped me a little while back.
I do.
And
I do.
I always want to appreciate, or at least...
You doing better?
I am. I have rough times because of pain. The pain management condition in this country is really, really bad right now, because if you don't have cancer, they have a hard time justifying treating your pain.
Yeah.
And I have severe autoimmune diseases that affect my joints, and it makes me hurt. And if you put a cancer patient next to me, they look better than I do.
Oh,
and it's not even close. I mean, it's bad sometimes. I, as you know, George, I almost committed suicide 2 years ago.
Yes.
I prayed to my God in the name of Lord Jesus Christ right before I attempted it. I need to let him know where I was at and why I was there, how I had gotten to that place. I was in medical school, kind of, I couldn't finish it because I was too ill and I was getting all the patients' illness because of my autoimmune disease. I couldn't hike. I couldn't get another job, even teaching, because even though the students liked me, I guess I just wasn't meant to be. And I just felt useless to the world. And my wife and my daughter at that time were in Costa Rica, and I thought I would just quietly pass from this life and leave them, you know, everything that I had behind, and that they would be better off without me. I agree with your host that, and my position on suicide before that was much less empathetic. I think I judged that, you know. How could you do that so selfish? And it is not a matter of selfishness. It's a matter. In fact, it was the most selfless thing I could think to do because of the burden I felt I was placing on everybody.
Right.
What I do know, in spite of all of that, is there is an afterlife. I've seen spirit multiple times, probably about five times. I pray for comfort and I pray for healing. I pray that I don't have to suffer in pain forever, because I used to be a marathon runner. I was a 17-time marathon runner. I ran a ton of half marathons, and I didn't just do it for myself, but then I taught other people how to run marathons and how to finish. And I served in my church, and I taught people here in the country, not legally, I taught them how to speak English. And I did those things out of love for human beings. And now it's like I'm just in my own world, and I need to get out of there. But sometimes I'm just not healthy enough to do it. And I think you understand where I'm coming from, George.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's just a name that comes into my mind, if you don't. It's just a pain management thing. And you may know this person. His name is John Kabat-Zinn, Z-I-N-N. And it's a whole, it's beyond, when medication is just not enough and you're still suffering. And it's got to do, I know in the show we're talking about being in the present moment and quieting your mind, you'd have to read up on him to get all of that, because he's got some audio tapes and things like that. But I know when my dad had cancer and was suffering terribly, his method really helped alleviate some of the pain that medication couldn't. So it's John, J-O-N, Kabat, K-A-B-A-T-T, I believe. And last name Zinn, Z-I-N-N. Maybe just something to do.
Stay strong, Mr. Anonymous. And I'm glad you were able to connect with us many months ago. Gabriella is in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Gabriella.
Longtime listener, George. Always a pleasure. Sandra, hello.
Thank you.
I'll make this as quickly as possible. Two things. I'm Guatemalan, and when I was 18, I knew that every Sunday, my whole family, they would get together at my great aunt's home. Well, I had the pleasure of experiencing a seance, which they have apparently every Sunday. So they do this on a regular basis to speak with our deceased family. But that's a personal experience that I've had. Now, personally, when I see a spirit, I was in Mass. This is on a different occasion. And it was for my late uncle's one-year anniversary after he passed. And my whole family was there. After the Mass, I had a conversation with my mom. And we both saw the image of my uncle, whom he had passed away of cancer, but he had suffered a severe stroke when he was 24 years old. He had lost the momentum on the left side of his body. And when we both saw his image as a spirit, it was a younger version of him, and it was a healthy version. And it described exactly what he was wearing. And my mom said to the T, but my mom also added, yeah, but you didn't see your grandparents that were sitting right next to him also. Wow.
Ah, that's perfect.
True story.
And how do you explain that, Sandra?
Well, they were there, and the fact
are there. What brings them there? Some kind of need?
Love. And especially in times of grief.
They sense something.
They want to be around, and they know you're hurting, and here we are. So it'll be very interesting once I cross over, and probably you too, George.
I'm not crossing over.
What we can do.
I'm just going to keep doing this show.
You're going to do it.
Just keep plodding along here. Tell folks about the Orlando conference again.
Yes, March 29th through 31st, 2019. I have a whole panel of afterlife experts and talk about grief, talk about having a powerful life. I, and this is not an ego statement, actually do believe I've got the best people on planet Earth to deliver the information.
You've got some great guests.
Yeah, and people can actually come a day early and stay a day late and take the workshops. This couple, Phil Dykes and Carrie McLeod, are two of the best teaching mediums. And it's not like you're taking a course in mediumship and the day you spend with them, but you actually get to tune in your own psychic sense and start practicing using that, and then dabble in the mediumship as well. So don't just believe me that it's possible. You can do that. And Scott Milligan is also teaching people how to quiet their mind and how to blend with their own spirit team, because it's not just our own loved ones. I mean, we do have guides and people that are with us, supporting us from the invisible range, you know, just right around us. And we have a cheering crew around us, so you can learn how to blend with them. And you go to WeDon'tDieOrlando.com. And I also want to mention WeDon'tDieRadio.com is where there are free 303 now episodes, not only just about the afterlife, but we leave each one with, if we don't die, how to have a powerful life. And so there's some great tools
And just a shout out to my listeners.
Good for you.
I know many are listening now, and it's changed a lot of lives. And so I'm grateful that I get to be this humble servant.
You keep at it, and I will see you probably in September.
You'll see me somewhere for sure.
You got it. All right. Be well. Sandra Champlain, and her book is called We Don't Die. Now, tomorrow on Coast to Coast, we're going to have some incredible stories for you. So make sure you're part of the program. Don't touch your dial. Just keep it where it is. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, Tim Bonnell, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.